HD Smartcast.
You're listening to a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello and welcome to the HD Brunch Podcast, the weekly companion to your printed copy of HD Brunch, where I, your host Karishma Kunzang from Team Brunch, give you a behind the scenes of what you'll be reading on Sunday. There'll be interviews with the biggest Bollywood celebrities talking about things that matter to them. You'll also get to know a little more about the columns by Veer Sanghvi and Seema Goswami from the columnists themselves. Why should you listen to it? Well, it's one of India's top Sunday magazines. It has the best editors, columnists, and opinion leaders bringing you what's happening around town. Listen on for an additional dose of brunch. This series is available on hdsmartcast.com, India's fastest growing podcast producing platform.
Hey guys, how's it going? Okay, alcohol. A socially acceptable drug in India. Alcoholism, a taboo topic usually brushed under the carpet. But personally, having dated somebody who is suffering from this ailment, because I can tell you that it is just that. But it's not a hurdle that you can't conquer. It takes a lot of willpower and focus, which is what we learn from our cover stars and actors Pooja Bhatt and Imad Shah. Join me as I speak to them about the perils of alcohol and alcoholism and the joys of sobriety from someone who's been sober for 4.5 years and a millennial who stopped himself from letting it become an issue. Listen on for more. Hi Pooja and Imad, congratulations on the HD Brunch cover and welcome to the HD Brunch podcast.
You've spoken about battling alcoholism, but what was that journey like for you mentally?
Mind altering. Believe me, it's a trip. You got to try it. I felt higher sober than I felt being high on anything I've ever kind of abused in my life. And that's not just a blurb. The point is that I don't think I would have been able to throw myself as willingly and as openly into Bombay Begums if I still had alcohol in my life.
Yeah.
I don't think that the universe would have manifested the way it has to be able to give me what it has given me at this point in my life. I mean, I wasn't somebody who was even looking at myself as an actor anymore. I mean, I'd been there, done that. I've seen stardom. I've seen kind of being called a has-been. I've been tasted success as a producer. I've won national awards. I've had hit films. I've had flop films. And I thought that part of my life is over. I'm not somebody who looks back in that sense. I don't rest on past laurels. I mean, nostalgia is fun occasionally, but it's not a lane that I choose to live in.
Yeah.
You know. And when this happened, it was like spring arrived in my garden, you know, out of nowhere. And I don't think that it would have if I had not taken charge of my destiny 4.5 years ago and looked myself in the eye and understood that there is something that I'm trying to escape. There is something that I'm trying to avoid looking at square in the eye, which is why I'm leaning so much on alcohol. And alcohol was my drug of choice. I call it a drug because it is a drug. Just because it's socially acceptable, it doesn't mean that it's not a drug. I mean, there's a great line I read in a book which said that, you know, wife beating without alcohol is like a circus without lions. So I think that the corporate world chooses to allow you to drink, use caffeine. In America, it's kind of, I'm not saying it's legal, but, you know, cocaine usage, for example, is more acceptable because it kind of somewhere stokes the male ego. There's no room for marijuana, even though it grows from the goddamn dirt, because of the fact that somewhere it kills the ego, the male ego.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a whole different discussion. My point is that I had to make that change. And I'm just very grateful that I was able to be honest with myself. And just pull the plug when I did, because if I didn't, I possibly would not have been sitting in front of you today. So I'm very grateful to this process of sobriety and the lockdown. If I hadn't somewhere dealt with my battles and been sober, and being sober means sitting with yourself without leaning on any externals, you know, not trying to escape, not through a bottle, not through a relationship, not through any externals. That gave me a lot of kind of center during the lockdown, because I mean, that's where I was in my head and heart, you know. And then there was another external force, of course, but I was already there in that sense. So it helped me in many ways. But I talk about it loudly, repeatedly, because I believe that even addiction is a male domain. I mean, society gives men the opportunity to say that, you know what, I was an addict and I've kicked the bottle. But somehow women are not given that privilege. And I think that it's important that the stigma goes away from any sort of addiction.
Yeah.
And alcoholism in particular.
Exactly.
And because it's a disease that kind of fools you into believing that you don't have it. It destroys families. It destroys everyone who comes into contact with you. And women drink in private. So where's the question of recovering openly?
So
I chose to kind of make the world into my AA class, because for me, you know, suppressing things somehow doesn't work personally.
Yeah.
It festers and comes out in very ugly ways. So I have to hold my frailties to light.
Yeah.
Some might call it courageous. I don't think it's courageous. It's just a trait I'm born with. And I have to act on what's natural to me. You know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. But that's the path I walk on. That's the life I choose to live. So I'm just a great advocate of airing your angst and airing your grief. Because at the end of the day, there's more achieved by doing that than by suppressing things. And ironically, that's what my character Rani in Bombay Begum does as well.
Yeah.
She hides this major kind of tragedy of hers,
which
she has been sexually assaulted and abused. And then finally, the bridge to her, you know, 13-year-old stepdaughter is exactly that. So it just reminds you that, you know, whatever you try to hide could actually be your greatest strength.
Exactly.
What I would tell my younger self is what Rani tells the stepdaughter in that scene, which says that, you know, risk your life for your art, not for some stupid boy.
That's an amazing scene.
You know, that could have been my 49-year-old me talking to the 19-year-old or the 17-year-old, the 16-year-old me. And I think that we need to hear that more as kids. Men and women need to hear that more from their parents, that, you know what, give it all up. And women especially, because we just put ourselves on the back burner because we are meant to kind of somewhere then fulfill this obligation in a man finally. So I think that's the advice I would give the younger me. But as far as addiction and as far as alcoholism is concerned, I don't hold myself up as some role model. All I say is that this is what I've done. I was able to look myself in the eye.
But how did you arrive at that moment? Sorry, do you remember there was this one point? I mean, I remember you saying it was Christmas Eve.
No, I quit drinking on Christmas Eve, and it was a difficult time because I can't remember one Christmas Eve that's not been soaked in champagne or wine or some malt or whatever else you could get your hands on.
Yeah.
But it was a conscious decision, and it actually came from a very simple message my father sent me, and he wasn't trying to wean me off alcohol.
Mm.
He's been an alcoholic himself. He's been sober now for 32 years. But he never told me not to drink.
Okay.
Because you can't tell someone.
Yeah,
you can't tell someone to stop using.
Yeah,
it has to come from them. Even though a lot of people told him that, you know, why don't you tell her and whatever. And I was a functional alcoholic. And people say that, what do you mean by functional? I mean, you couldn't tell at 5:30 in the morning whether I was waking up or I was going to sleep to my Twitter handle. Because I was articulate, every kind of comma was in place. I would walk out of a party, I could drink most people under the table. I had I drank how I lived, fully and copiously.
Yeah.
There were no half measures, you know. So we were talking one day, and it was just about something else. And he sent me a message saying, "I love you, kid." And I sent him a message back saying that, you know, I love you too, Dad. And actually, you're the most important thing in my life. And he said, well, if you love me, then love yourself, because I live in you. And it was not the message. It was what I read in that message, what I read in between those words. And I told myself that from today onwards, I'm going to be the best me. And what did I do that night? I went out and I drank half a bottle of single malt. I woke up the next morning and I looked myself in the eye and I'm like, is this being the best you? And the answer was a resounding no. And it was the 24th of December that morning. And I said, tonight, I am not going to drink. And I put my phone on silent. I sat in my little flat in Bandra with my four cats. Heard all the church bells ringing around me at midnight.
Oh, yeah.
You know, really silent night wafting in. And I didn't drink. And I woke up on the 25th morning feeling like I'd conquered Mount Everest.
And Imad, you recently put up a post. Have you restrained from alcohol? Is that something that you've done consciously, or is it just so, you've lost your taste?
No, so at that point, there was definitely a strong like, physical aspect to it.
Okay.
Because I was exercising a lot. I was prepping for this show that has a lot of action in it. And I just found that the two just aren't compatible, you know,
yeah.
when it comes to intense physical activity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other thing I've learned from, like, of late, doing a fair bit of action prep and then shooting action and so on. You need to be at a physical peak condition
mm-hmm.
as an actor to do certain things. Like, you know, we often tended to, of course, look up to, like, actors who are very intense on screen with their performance and so on. Maybe I haven't. Now I'm really beginning to see the other more physical aspect of it. And as I'm getting fitter and stronger and working on stuff which is different from things I've done earlier.
Yeah.
And those tweaks are kind of beginning to
mm-hmm.
enter
mm-hmm.
the equation for me.
Mm-hmm.
And also, of course, like being a professional musician for a period of time was always basically putting me in the vicinity of
yeah.
alcohol.
Yeah.
Clubs,
yeah. I mean,
festival backstages
yeah.
and all of that stuff, you know.
Yeah,
so,
but you know,
yeah.
absolutely, and it's not only our profession. I realize, Imad, the point is that we're living in a world where it's far more difficult not to drink
yeah.
than it is to drink. I mean, I had to make more excuses for not drinking than I ever had to for drinking.
Right.
I mean, because initially, what happens is people can't believe it. They're like, "Oh, come on, you know, you're not drinking." I'm like, "No, I'm not drinking." Why, you quit forever?
Yeah.
I mean, come on, yeah, today's my birthday, today's my anniversary, today's my whatever. And then they want to distance themselves from you because you're a reminder
yes.
to them
yeah.
that you
yeah.
can't quit and maybe you have a problem.
Yeah.
So then they're like, oh my God, you know, you have this halo of sobriety around your head. So I'm like, you know what? You want to find out who your friends are, get sober, man.
Yeah.
yeah.
Because you know at once who really is kind of around you just because of you or because of the fact that there's this bottle that's
yeah,
connecting
yeah.
you guys.
Right.
Yeah.
And a lot of crap fell away from my life, I must say.
Yeah.
Mm.
And a lot of gems were revealed at the same time.
Yeah.
So everywhere you go for a work meeting, wine. You go for a business meeting, you know, a beer.
Yeah.
So it's just become so acceptable socially
yeah.
to drink.
Yeah.
I mean, you get deals at breakfast at 8
yeah,
o'clock
yeah.
in beer places. I mean, you know, it's just happy hour constantly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's everywhere. And it's also a high-pressure city.
Yeah, for sure.
And COVID has kind of,
oh my
you know,
God.
Fueled all of those kind of anxieties
yeah.
and uncertainties within
mm-hmm.
us. So it's just not easy. Believe me, every day is an uphill task. So, but at the same time, every day is a feeling of, I've done one more day.
Yeah.
It's another day. It's another day.
Yeah.
So it's a reward as well. And no hangover is an amazing feeling.
Yeah.
That's the best part, actually. It's like not having a hangover.
Okay. And do you think an issue like this, which is like any other ailment, which so many people have, especially difficult to deal with given that there's a spotlight on you? I mean, how much more difficult does it make?
The sense that you have the usual idiots who kind of would like to shame you for it.
Yeah.
And I say idiots with affection because they don't know any better.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
so if you make a point that doesn't possibly align with their political affiliation or something that they believe in, they'll be, oh, but you know, what do you know? You're just an alcoholic. And I'm like, hang on. Recovering alcoholic.
Yeah.
And very proud of it. So there's a huge difference.
Yeah.
Educate
yeah.
yourself on the difference in the terminology. So I don't allow that to kind of bring me down because I look at it as something that I'm extremely proud of.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that all of us should hold our wounds and our scars up to the world with pride because you've survived that.
Yeah.
And it teaches you so much. I mean, it's 4.5 years have taught me grace, compassion. It's taught me a lot of kindness, you know, first to yourself. Because you realize, suddenly at the age of 40-something, that you spend a lifetime just being, you know, so needy and so giving in all the wrong areas and you've just forgotten completely about your own insides. Or you only depend on somebody else to kind of fulfill that vacuum and then actually realize that you don't need someone to do that. Because only once you kind of somewhere heal yourself and patch yourself up can you even attempt to be there for somebody else.
Yeah.
So, which is why I come back to the whole thing of, you know, I mean, earlier it was, a man was meant to be a solution. You realize today that it's not, he cannot be a solution. At best, if someone's a companion, great, but that's as far as it can, yeah, it can be. Yeah. Like, I mean, I've met doctors and stuff who told me that you're very brave. I'm like, what's so brave about it? And they were like, no, yaar, hamari profession mein nahi bolte. And it's our job to actually kind of help you, but we don't speak because there is a shame attached to it. And then I realized in this last year, where the whole world and their aunties, the media, general people, everybody went so ballistic. You know, so our whole approach to mental health, our whole approach to emotional needs, our whole approach to kind of, you know, the insides is we are in the dark ages.
Yeah, like as Pooja said, people will try to dismiss the more nuanced and sensible things that you have to say, or even deal with a more nuanced question regarding something like mental health by using the most simplistic possible like explanation for it, you know?
Yeah.
That is a danger which is a danger related to your question, which is about how the outside world will perceive it or the media will perceive it. So there's that danger of like oversimplification, which is another added benefit of staying away from you.
All right. And Imad, you know, musicians are often given the image of addiction to something or the other. It's just there.
You know, I'm sorry, I want to interrupt you.
Please do.
Okay. I have never gone to Alcoholics Anonymous.
Okay.
That's not something that I hold with great pride and say that, oh, you know what, I'm so strong, so I never needed to go to AA. It's just the way my mind is engineered. Once I decided and I just pressed the click button, it was off. Not everyone is designed like that.
Yeah.
It doesn't make me superior to somebody who will need to go to AA. And because one of the reasons I didn't need to perhaps is because I could openly speak to my parents, to my loved ones, to myself. Yeah. A lot of people don't have anyone to share their burden and their grief with. But a dear friend of mine who works very closely with AA took me to a class about 3 years into my sobriety. More to his account, because it'll really give them a boost to say that, you know, someone like you is being so open, then it'll kind of give them a boost. There are a lot of women there as well, young girls, isn't that? They'd love to hear you speak. And I went there and I was amazed with the cross section of society who are abusing alcohol, who are abusing drugs. And when there was this knee jerk response last year, and everybody was going out, you know, wanting to make criminals out of anybody who's an addict. You are forcing a whole generation to not even dare ask for help. Because they're like, oh my God, if we ask for help, we'll be put in jail.
You'd rather brush it under the carpet.
Exactly. So I think that, you know, we need to really evolve as a society in many ways. We really need to grow up as a nation, and we need to be a little bit more kind of sensitive, a little more, we need to show more empathy. If not, you're going to have a whole generation of kids who are just going to be completely separated from their homes, from their families, and they're not going to share their frailties, they're not going to share their kind of weaknesses, and they're not going to get have half a chance to be able to kind of pull out of something here.
It applies to pharmaceutical drugs,
antidepressants,
opiates of all. In America, there's like an epidemic going on, people who are abusing painkillers and opiates.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, people get addicted to painkillers far more.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's, we need to evolve. I mean, you know, it's something that we really, really need to do a lot of thinking and unlearning and rethinking about.
And that's a really good point, that it's actually a cross-section of society.
Yeah.
Maybe the musicians or the rock stars or whatever, the people who have the public
that's
eye.
That's just
and
the stereotype.
You know, because that's more attractive. Nah? You would rather talk about a musician or an actor going to AA or possibly abusing something. Why would you want to talk about a bank teller from some bank in some obscure B-town? You wouldn't care about his life.
Yeah, true.
So it's really about what you want to see. I mean, you know, we see the world as we are, not how the world is. For me, the kindness of strangers has always, always humbled me beyond anything, whether it was during the first few months of my giving up booze, whether it is through the response to Bombay Begums. I remember my booze shop, Deepak Wines is a shop in Bandra, I was a very, very serious customer of his. Anywhere in Bombay I was, at 3 in the morning if I called, and if I wanted champagne, he would put the champagne in a plastic bag with ice in it so it would reach me cold.
Oh, nice.
Because he was smart enough to know that by the time, I didn't have the energy to chill it at that point, right? For a year into my sobriety, these friends of mine were coming over, and they are the occasional red wine drinkers, so I didn't have any red wine at home. So I called him, and he recognized my voice. I said, hello, and he said, ha, ma'am. So I said, कैसे हो? He said, मैं ठीक हूँ. So I said, red wine है? He said, हाँ है. वैसे मुझे please दो बोतल भेजिए. There was a pause. And then he said, किसके लिए है? तो I said, मेरे लिए नहीं है यार, मेरे दोस्त के लिए है, मैंने तो छोड़ दी. तो he said, हाँ मैंने पढ़ा था कि आपने छोड़ दी, और इसलिए जब आपका फोन आया तो मेरा दिल घबरा गया.
Wow, I was so moved by that. Yeah, that's such
a... I'm like, here is this guy.
Yeah.
Who needs me to buy booze from him.
Exactly.
But he said, mera dil ghabra gaya, and here are these friends of mine, supposedly, who are like every second day trying to find some excuse because they are so down the rabbit, I'm halfway down the rabbit hole. They're there. Come on, yeah, Pooja, for me. If you love me, you'll have a drink, yeah. Come on, yeah, for me. If you can, it's my anniversary, it's my whatever. And I'm like, man. So it's your very own.
Yeah.
That want you to fail. It's your very own that have written your obituary. It's your very own who tell you that, you know what, you were then what you were. You passed your prime, forget about it. And the world has other plans for you. So my point is, don't allow your lover, your father, your mother, your sister, your brother, your best friend to write your narrative. You just need to not start believing people around you when they have some idea of you. You know, and we lean on that too much without realizing.
And Imad, how long has it been that you've not had a single drop?
It's not like that. I think that my relationship with alcohol has just become a lot healthier than it was.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah. And that was kind of the end result for me as well. You know?
Okay.
That's what I intended to...
Can you elaborate? Would you want to elaborate on healthier?
I guess it's kind of like a little bit to each their own when it comes to how everyone sort of responds to things. So I found that what I needed was a way to be able to have a cap, to be able to have like certain sort of systems in place where I can perhaps enjoy a little bit of alcohol and not yet, you know, have it affect me physically or mentally.
Yeah.
And then, strangely, actually, all this time of isolation, probably that connects with what Pooja is saying when it comes to other people and so on. Maybe that's an excuse that we mentally create for ourselves, but definitely this period of isolation. I actually know a lot of people who have kind of become a lot more
dependent
become a lot more dependent. Yeah. Started drinking a lot more in the last year. For me, it was the opposite. Actually. So that was a very pleasant sort of development for me.
Nice.
And now it's a very balanced
situation. It's a well balanced situation. Yeah. And how do you kind of like how did you kind of get to that point when you were like, okay, I need to kind of balance it out? Was there a point?
It was a slow build up towards that.
Yeah.
And I think I just, and it was exactly like March 15th or whatever, and he'd come back from his friend's crazy wedding party somewhere out of town, and then it became one of those end of the world parties because everyone was like, oh my god, what's going to happen now? Was that the last party ever? And everyone was like seriously suspecting that that's going to be the case. And so, but again, it was like building up slowly to that. There was non-stop touring for a period of time,
and that,
so the lack of rest along with the late nights was causing a lot of havoc, I think. And havoc was not the right word, it was just causing sort of confusing.
It was a hectic.
It was very hectic.
Sleepless.
It was physically draining.
Yeah.
Sleepless. And I thought the value of sleep kind of really, really realized that.
Right? You realize that, you know, I mean, like for me also, I would drink a certain amount of drinks, and I wouldn't be drunk, but I needed to drink that to be able to switch off. And then you'd wake up kind of when the booze wore off. And then you'd be going on that adrenaline, shooting, working, whatever, and you'd come back. And then you'd actually, I slept. For the first time in so many years when I actually quit.
Yeah.
And then the body wakes up with like not an ounce of alcohol in it. You just feel so,
that's
quite amazing.
Did you also experience, friends saying, hey, birthday, anniversary, Pilena? Though, of course, you haven't met it.
There was a little bit of that.
Yeah.
But I think I managed to kind of write that out quite comfortably.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it wasn't something like...
There
was no pressure. Right. Yeah,
yeah, okay.
The pressure, I think, was more often... I almost kind of succumbed to temptation. Even that was... So conquering that feeling was the definition of the healthy relationship.
Okay.
I think the younger generation can maybe take some parallels from... all the talk about addiction with regard to this form
social
of addiction.
Social media too, because that's one big addiction. I mean,
completely. I mean, the fact that Instagram changed the whole settings of the likes that you get, yeah, where nobody can see them now because they're putting a lot of pressure on young kids.
Exactly.
Who were like, oh my God, I only got 10 likes and you got 200. So they were feeling worthless and they were getting suicidal. So they changed that entire kind of, you know,
yeah.
You can't, I mean, only I can see how many likes. You can't see them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you got to look at all of that. And Facebook, I don't think does anybody need any more reason to not be on Facebook is my question.
It's a pretty impulsive thing. You know? Like people on their phones like a lot, and that is something which I always feel like going into the future, perhaps alcohol addiction might start
very lame in comparison.
Feeling quaint and distant
exactly.
in the past, you know?
That's true.
And I wonder if there will be other kinds of addictions which in the future, which will perhaps be, again, not called addictions. You know?
Yeah.
That is also a problem where you don't really view it as an addiction.
Yeah.
You just do it because that's a lifestyle. And so many young kids that's the lifestyle.
Yeah, yeah.
On the phone.
That's how
they're
seeing it.
Tinder or Seema, do you know that matchmaker?
Say, what do either of those mean?
You can't say that. Things. You know what both those things mean. I know you do.
Yeah, I know what Tinder is, but I've never been on Tinder because I think people wouldn't believe me if I said I was on Tinder. You know, I mean, that's the problem. They would think that I was bullshitting, I'm sure, right? But I have never been on Tinder, though I've seen, looking to some of the choices that my male friends had, and they were not very appealing in that sense. So I really wondered, and why they were all like 20 kilometers away and everything. I thought the whole idea was that you were meant to kind of hook up people close by. So I don't understand this swipe left and right concept. But Seema aunty, you're talking about the matchmaker on Netflix.
Yeah.
You know, I vicariously watched that show. I was appalled that I was actually vicariously watching it with morbid fascination. But I don't know. But then given the choice of men in my life, maybe I do need a matchmaker. Who knows? You know, maybe finally somebody else needs to choose for me because I've made some fine choices, haven't I, in the past? I mean, no offense meant to anybody. God bless you, all the men in my life. I mean, you know,
ball been there.
Thank you so much. Thank you for allowing us to ramble on.
Thank you for allowing
49-year-old me to shoot with this rather delectable 32-year-old. And it's good fun, yeah. The world is certainly changing.
Okay, thank you.
If you have been making a list of places you'd like to go and eat once COVID is finally done and over with, I mean, mine spans the length and breadth of the country, but I think I'll only be able to cover one city that offers it all at relatively decent prices as compared to Bombay, which is Delhi. And yes, you guessed it, I'm a total Delhi wali. So just like, you know, our new In Bed With Star in the new edition. So, you know, I'd begin with the round of Majnu Katila, then Humayupur, Nagaland's Kitchen and Nimto. Then there's Lavash and whatever Chef Megha Kohli chooses to whip up for me. And Fig and Maple, of course. And then there's Indian Accent, which tops the list, as does Masala Library. But then there's also the Galotti Kebab at Rajendra Da Dhaba, which just melts in your mouth as you melt into it, you know. And of course, there's Big Chill, Old Delhi and Dessert at Miam and Defense Bakery. Now, I'm going to go and order something nice for myself and leave you with, you know, HD Brunch columnist Veer Sanghvi's much more versatile and widespread list. Oh, and there's also chicken patties from Wenger's and Golgappe from A to B in Green Park. I think that's enough for now. So I'll see you guys next week. Bye.
Do you think we'll ever travel again? I don't mean like next door or to a holiday resort not far from where we live. I mean really travel, go abroad, go to restaurants, have fun, enjoy cities, eat on the streets. Yeah, I know you'll tell me that this can't go on forever, that one day COVID will end. And you know what? I used to believe that. But after this latest kick in the butt, I've decided not to ever hope that things will get better. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. But at the moment, the thought of traveling abroad, eating at restaurants, seems like such a distant dream. And yet, at some level, we're all dreamers. So I sat down the other day and I dreamt. And I dreamt of a time when we could travel again. And I dreamt of going to restaurants. I dreamt of going to new cities. I dreamt of going back to old cities, to ones I knew well. And I wondered where I would go. So this week, here's my fantasy wish list. It's of places I want to go to and what I want to eat. Yeah, I know it won't happen. I know it's a dream. I know it's a fantasy. But hey, a man's got a dream, right? I dream actually of going to places like Paris, not to go to the Michelin 3-star restaurants, but to go to small cafes, eat simple things like a roast chicken. I dream of going to New York and not going to Le Bernardin or 11 Madison Park or some great restaurant, of just standing on the street, seeing the yellow taxis pass by, seeing steam come out of the manhole covers, hearing the sirens and eating a hot dog that costs just $2. For me, that's New York. I dream of going to Bangkok, which is, of course, one of the world's great food cities. But the great thing about Bangkok is you can go to a hawker, you can sit at a cafe, you can spend virtually no money, and you can have a terrific meal. I dream of going to Vienna, and of course, there are great restaurants. But all I want to do is eat a pastry, maybe, sit on a street corner, drink a cup of coffee, go to somewhere like Sacher, which is a pastry shop, and eat the Sacher tort, which was invented there. Will all this happen? Will life return to normal? I know I should be optimistic, but I'm not feeling very optimistic at the moment. All I feel like doing is dreaming.
The last time I went on a safari or anything close to it was probably when I was a preteen. It was at the Jaltapada National Park in northern West Bengal, and we were guided by my late favorite uncle. And I remember sitting atop an elephant as he spotted some exotic animals, a leopard apparently, not that I have a recollection of it, and some rhinos and wild boars and the like. But what I remember most is Chulbuli, who was this little baby elephant who was following her mum, and her mum was a part of her herd. And I wanted to bring her home, but thank God my parents talked me out of that tantrum. An elephant in a Mumbai apartment is laughable, and we're just getting started with the puppy in the apartment. So let's see how that goes. But here's what HT Brunch columnist Rehana Munir has to say about her safari rides.
So I'm just back from the Jim Corbett National Park. This was a trip that was planned many months earlier when one thought that the pandemic would subside. Sadly, that was not to be, but I somehow made it through all the pandemic anxiety and all the logistical hurdles. As usual, as soon as I stepped into the jungle, I automatically heard David Attenborough's reassuring voice in my head, narrating whatever it is that I'm seeing or seeking. There's just so much going on in the jungle, you're spoiled for choice. This time, my first sighting happened to be a majestic crested serpent eagle perched high on a sal tree. But the moment you encounter fellow tourists, you know, I think that's the moment I feel very deflated because they're carrying all this fancy equipment, you know, camera equipment, and they're all kitted out in camouflage gear. And they seem to have this unwavering focus on tigers. And it somehow makes me feel like if I haven't spotted a tiger every few hours, I'm not doing very well in the jungle. So there I am, marveling at low-hanging honeycombs and towering termite hills and paradise flycatchers with their bridal gown tails and the pigmentation on an elephant's ear, the bashfulness of a barking deer. But when I look at the cluster of gypsies, you know, the jeeps that are all just waiting for the elusive tiger to appear out of a grassland or up to the watering hole, I'm racked with self-doubt. Of course, this time too, I was a great disappointment to my guide and driver, asking to be taken away as far as possible from the human din and following tree-lined paths and chasing sunsets and all that sort of thing. So this week's column, it looks at the two kinds of people you find on a safari with the express wish that we're all able to lose ourselves in the wild somewhere in a happier future. Stay well, stay safe, and happy reading. Bye.
She joined her dream school, Berklee College of Music in Boston, during the pandemic, even though it meant distance learning, because that's how passionate she is when it comes to music. I'm talking about Taisha Kohli, a recent HT Branch star who wrote about her experience of attending college from her home in Gurgaon. The Delhi musician also recently released her debut single, Midnight Lover, and we got her to sing a version of it for you guys. Hope you enjoy it.
Hi, my name is Taisha Kohli, and you're listening to my debut single, Midnight Lover, on HT City Brunch Podcast. Hope you enjoy it. Thank you so much for listening to my debut single Midnight Lover. It's available on all streaming platforms and I hope you enjoyed it. And I also hope you have a happy, happy Sunday brunch.
The weekend is when you take a break from a hectic week, whether it's work from home or work from work. It's also a day to develop perspective on things by not just consuming news, but also analyzing it by listening to different points of views and figuring out what you feel about it. We hope we've been able to do just that with today's HT Brunch podcast. Feel free to give us feedback and suggestions on HT Smartcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or DM us directly at HT Brunch on Instagram and Twitter. To listen to more podcasts, log on to htsmartcast.com or suno Naye Nazariye Se.
I will see you back here next weekend with another dose of entertainment that keeps things real. Till then, happy brunching, guys.
This was a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HT Smartcast.
HT Smartcast.